Hey everybody, this is Tim Chavez from Faith Matters. For this conversation, we spoke with Christine Gilman, who is a facilitator at the Compassionate Listening Project. The Compassionate Listening Project was founded by Jean Knudsen-Hoffman, who was taught by Thich Nhat Hanh and wrote the book Compassionate Listening, which you'll hear Christine reference a few times. When we first heard Christine talk about this subject, we knew it was something we wanted to integrate more into our lives and hope that its principles become a greater part of our communities and society. As we get into the episode, Christine will explain specifically what compassionate listening is. And to give you just a little bit more on Christine's background, as a compassionate listening facilitator, she consults globally with university and organizational leaders who want to integrate compassionate listening values into their curriculum and events. She also facilitates compassionate listening workshops engaging teens, women in trauma centers, and interfaith organizations in the Middle East. She holds a degree in practical theology from Portland State University. Thanks as always for listening, and we hope you enjoy this conversation with Christine Gilman.
Hey, Christine Gilman, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for doing this with us. We're excited to have you here.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
So our paths crossed just a few weeks ago, and a couple of weeks ago, and I just haven't stopped thinking about what I learned from you about compassionate listening, and we decided this is just such an important topic, and it feels really transferable. It's like something that you can use immediately in your own family, but it also feels really important in broader spheres like politics and or other places that can be contentious. So can you give us an overview? Tell us about the principles. What is compassionate listening, and how is it maybe different than what we think of?
Sure. So compassionate listening really is about holding space for reflective dialogue. And so the introduction of that is one of the most important things about them is we teach the set of practices designed to help people access their heart, right? And the wisdom of their heart. And so we set up really simple principles based on, first of all, that the wisdom is within you. And so even in Jean's book, she quotes the Quakers, who she was very fond of and a participant with. And in England, she saw the power of recognizing the divine, the spiritual power within every human being and the light of life within every human being. And so from there, they crafted some very simple core practices that would be the truest guidance within each person. And if we can, it's not our job to fix others, but to enable them to discover their own truth. So the five practices are very simple. And that is, first of all, to cultivate compassion. And compassion just means to suffer with. So this includes developing empathy, first of all, for yourself and then for the others, the willingness to step into another person's shoes. That's compassion. How can you do that? Developing a fair witness is a second one. And that would be similar to hearing someone's story and you're up on a balcony and you're looking down at what's taking place. You're just the observer. So it's a fixed event, but you are not there to make a judgment or say it's right or wrong. You're merely the observer. So that's the second guideline. And the third one is to respect self and others. So important to do that. So if you recognize that we're each made in the image of God and the light of God is in each human being, it's not a step further hardly to respect self and others, right? So you take that position. The next one would be listening with the heart. And this skill requires that you quiet your heart, because science has now shown that the heart is more powerful than the brain. So we access analyzing, we value knowledge, we value science. And now it's showing that the heart is really the thing that powers the brain and not vice versa. It's not the brain powering the heart. So if you give that value to that and listen with your heart, it's always, always, always a doorway to deeper understanding. And then speaking from the heart is you are seeking your own deep truth in a calm way after you've centered yourself, and then you speak your own truth, and it's without judgment, right? And so you are aware of what your triggers are, and so you become like a really giant computer.
Oh, Christine, can I ask you?
Oh, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was just going to ask at a really high level, what is the difference between listening and conversation? And I think, like, if I were to hear this right off the bat, I would probably think that we're talking about having productive conversations. But I think there is actually a focus that we're on listening more so than just dialogue back and forth with what we're talking about. Is that right?
Yes, you're so right. And you know, often they kind of are, they're playing against with each other. You're going in and out of it. But when you're entering into a conversation with someone, you're like this giant computer and you're listening for what they're saying. And your own wisdom within you will tell you, ask a deepening question. So conversation is just casual back and forth. But deep listening is you are choosing to be in service to the other person. So now you are creating like a room or a table, right? And it's laid out and it's a place of peace. So you're creating an environment of peace for this person so that they can speak. And they speak their own truth when they know that you're listening from your heart, that there's no judgment, that you're trustworthy, you're not going to be critical. There's just a real difference with opening your heart and being present in your heart that they feed on. And then they open up and the truth from their heart just gets exposed and open. Now you can dialogue about much more difficult things because they feel trustworthy. So sometimes you flip back and forth towards conversation. So if you hear the person starting to in their conversation talk about something more painful, the point is to ask deepening questions, not for curiosity's sake so much as you are in service for them. How did you experience that? What did you think of that? How did it make you feel? So you want to get to their heart instead of their mind, because first they'll start analyzing and giving you knowledge and giving you reasons. And so if you can translate that into asking, how did this make you feel? Now you're moving into a higher gear, a different gear.
I love that so much. That's so simple, that the goal is to ask deepening questions. That's like something you can really think about and do in the moment. I had, just days after you had sort of introduced this to me, I had this, I don't know, I guess I would normally call it a conversation, but now I'm not so sure. But I was sitting with a friend, and her is a good friend, an old friend, and her dad had just very recently been diagnosed with a terminal cancer. And I realized that I am a pretty frenetic listener, I think, usually. And I felt myself, you know, tightening up with like trying to think of ideas and how they can spend this time and comfort. And it was all with goodwill. Like I wanted to help hold her pain and take that. And I felt like what I had after this conversation with you is just permission to let this deep understanding be the goal. And it was such an amazing experience. It was peace generating all by itself. Like it created peace between us. And I'm not sure I've ever experienced that before. Like it was like energy. It was so interesting. But anyway, it was counterintuitive because I think I have always thought.
So let me just say, let me just pause to say what happened to you. You slowed down to the speed of wisdom. That's exactly what takes place.
That is what it felt. That's totally what it felt like. As opposed to just, I think what I've always tried to give friends, which is like my best idea, like my best ideas that are flowing and I'm jumping on the end of their sentences. And it did feel like a real slowing down. But the thing that was so neat was to just feel that it accomplished what I had always hoped. It felt so much more natural and peaceful and made me, you know, totally a believer because it was so different. It was so different. But so that makes sense to me. Like I could feel how effective and like what a connecting moment that was for me with this friend. But what I wondered about when you were talking about in the five principles, respecting self and others, I think it's something that is tricky that comes up probably for a lot of people is when you're having a conversation with someone you disagree with, who you're not mourning together. It's not about like lifting a burden. It's really that like you are not on the same page and you're trying to understand. How do you think about respecting self? You know, does it mean that you need to say, this is the ground I'm holding, when I disagree? Or, you know, how do you save a place for, you know, what your own intuition is saying without mm-hmm. turning it into a conversation?
It's a terrific question and not always an easy one. So the respect for yourself is, first of all, you're holding yourself in the center and appreciating that you're even standing in this conversation that's difficult. Your very presence there is respect to yourself. And so give yourself that appreciation. So now when it's a difficult conversation, it's the same principles that you're going to engage in. And the only thing, it doesn't mean that you're going to have the truth on each one of them. Sometimes it's just respectful to them to listen to them. And if you don't feel like they're going to hear you, it's respectful for you not to even say anything. Just say, I hear you. So my colleague was telling me yesterday that she had this very encounter on vaccinations, which is a very high degree conversation right now, right? And yeah. So high intensity. And so she's this very learned, skilled, compassionate listener. And she said that she was so opposed to what she was saying, what this person was. So she just downloaded herself and stayed in a neutral place and without a judgment of what she's saying, because all in her head was going on this conversation about how she felt vaccination and what she wanted to say. And, oh, I'm going to defend my position and so forth. And she said she felt like she got into a beating up match because she had to constantly talk to herself and change the gears, go down, go up, go down. And so she said, what it helped me to do is to understand a person who was so different in her nursing and in the way she perceived what was taking place medically, that she felt compassion and she felt like she had understanding. And sometimes that's the best that you can do. She didn't try to change her mind and vice versa, but they both gave their complete opinion and had complete understanding. It ended the conversation still with intact respect on both sides. Their dignity was still intact. So sometimes we use the word, you know, the spark of God is in them, or the divine, or the light, or something. But when you use the word dignity, that seems to help people a lot more to hold on to what we're trying to do. You don't want to poke holes in that, because that's when the conversation descends.
Wow, that's such a great point.
And what do you recommend when you do feel like you're in a conversation that has descended into that point where your own walls of listening are sort of up and you want to convince the other person of your position, say both sides have already got, I've been in a few conversations like this, you know, in the past few months where sure. it feels like both sides really are not listening. They're only speaking. What is the best way to de-escalate? Is it just time to pull the plug on that conversation and hope for a better one next time? Or is there another?
There's nothing wrong. Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with saying, I think that maybe the best thing, I cherish you. And I would end those kinds of conversations with some appreciation, like for their values. So in a struggling relationship or struggling conversation like that, before it's completely ended, find something or start the conversation there. Or maybe even in the middle, find something that of their values. So let's just say, let's go back to the one on vaccination. So the value that could be, it's not I value you, it's what that person values. So that person really valued good medicine. That person valued science, the nurse. The nurse valued care for her family, even though it was in the non-vaccination part. So if you want to hold that place still of dignity and respect, then you speak about what you perceive they value. I see that elections and voting is really important to you, and I just really respect that, and I just really thank you for sharing and end the conversation. I appreciate your appreciation. But gratefulness yeah. and appreciation go a long way in a disagreement.
I heard you, I can't remember if this was in New York or whenever, I think maybe this is, you were talking about like recognizing the difference between facts and feelings and values, or so I think there was a little list like that. And I thought that was really helpful because it does kind of often come out as a big jumble. And if you're listening to sort out values and feelings and facts, I think it does, you can relate a lot more. Like I think often your values are going to overlap and maybe the interpretation of what to do about your values will be really different, but I can respect someone who's, you know, whose solution is different than mine, but who has the same foundation, you know, values foundation. And same with emotions. Like I think recognizing how someone's feeling is a real invitation to compassion. When you can see that someone is full of fear or full of pain or full of something that you can relate to, I think it's so much easier to just give them the benefit of a doubt. And, you know, it's
so
okay
true.
That they maybe are wrong. Even if you're true. Sure they're wrong.
It's yeah. so true. And that is it's the biggest component in compassionate listening. It's called reflective listening. And that's what it is: facts, feelings, and values. And so if you can sit and listen just for what the facts were, just what their values were, and then their feelings, and then ask them. Don't assume that you got it right or you're interpreting it. You're not reinterpreting. You're going to ask and find out, is that what I heard? Did I get that correct? And give them a chance to recorrect themselves and then go from there. But it's a key component in compassionate listening. Excuse me.
Yeah, I really love that. Do you have any experiences that you could share? I know that you've done work all over the world and in climates that are even more contentious than ours, which I thought was hard to believe until I heard some of your stories. And I would love for you to share just meaningful experiences that come to mind.
So I won't give all those big ones because sometimes they're too hard for people to relate to the really big things, because the others are just as important as well. But this one happened recently. We were in Florida and we were doing a rally and no words, compassionate listening was happening on my side and they didn't know it. So I had to engage almost in non-dialogue. So we are having a rally and it was by Democratic women who were in their 80s on Marco Island. And it was a fabulous group, but it got advertised and Antifa and the Proud Boys showed up and we knew that they were. They asked for a conversation and we said, yes, we'd love to have a conversation. So they came early and of course they had motorcycles and trucks and trying to disrupt before we even got started as we were setting up. And the police came and created quite a large barrier between us and asked us not to cross, to not instigate anything from them. And so most of the people seem to be like in their 50s and 60s and doing their horns. And it's like a tailgate party for them, eating and da da da. So I'm sitting on my end on the other side of the barrier and I'm sitting there and I was thinking to myself, I remember Jesus sitting on the beach and these disciples are distraught, right? He died, nothing worked in their plan. They're fishing, the nets are empty. And lo and behold, what is he doing? They see some man on the beach cooking fish. Didn't talk about the distraughtness, just cooking fish and making food for them. And I just thought how often in our lives food is kind of a even denominator, right? So I was looking around, what do we have? This is 9 o'clock in the morning, donuts. So I asked the guy who bought the donuts, do you mind if I take these donuts that are leftovers? And he said, no. So I crossed the other side and they're all like standoffish. The men are like, oh, what did you do? Did you poison us? Are you coming over here? And very standoffish. And I said to them, listen, we're all human beings. I just thought you guys might want a donut. We had ours and we thought you would want some too. So then they started joking around a little bit. Pretty soon they're all eating the donuts. A woman said, wow, you've got balls coming over here. And I said, listen, we're just in the same. We want common good for everybody. We want the common good. So enjoy the donuts. Have a good afternoon here and nice to meet you. I just shook hands with them, met who they were. And so then the rally gets started, and some of them were obnoxious to our speakers and so forth. But in the midst of it, two or three times, someone came over from the other camp in the middle of it and said, I went to the store and I got this drink and I thought you might like it. I saw what you did, so I want to bring you this bottle of water. So that changes up. Even though that may not have changed them right then and there, it was enough for 45 minutes to an hour and a half later, the person who was the most vocal came over to me and he shook my hand and he said, I just want to say to you how much I appreciate that you came over and did what you did. So there is a whole lot of listening going on there without the dialogue.
Yeah, love that.
So we have to engage all parts of our listening, right? Listen, yeah. listen. I look in the Bible and I see how many times listening is there. And I often wonder, so like, how did Jesus do that? How did he know the power went out of him? And so I think that you change gears again and you get quiet within yourself.
Your story reminded me of an article that was written by Gene Hoffman that is called An Enemy is One Whose Story We Have Not Heard. And I really, I really related to that. And I wonder if you have thoughts. So obviously there are conversations where you disagree with someone, but there's another level of conversation where not only do you disagree with someone, but you actually perceive them or they perceive you to be an enemy. Could you talk about this idea that Gene shared?
So it's again, they have their own truth, right? So when we're talking speak truth to power, we're just trying to talk to power and we're trying to do truth, but nobody is speaking from their heart. So it's about getting behind the story of what you see up front. What has compelled the person behind the scene to make the choices that they made? So an easy way to understand that is to go into their shoes. So let's say I went to Israel my first time and I took the tour in Jerusalem and in Israel, and I was there for about a week and I was mesmerized by everything that was there, the beautiful stories, everything that was going on. And I believed everything that they said, don't go there, this is dangerous, blah, blah, blah. And it was a beautiful time. So some years passed by and I was invited to go to Bethlehem. And so I arrived in Bethlehem and I put on the mindset to open up my eyes to the other side of the story. What is it that I don't see? What a shock. What a shock it was to see what is the story behind on the Gaza side? Why are their houses being torn down? What is this about the settlements? As well as listening to the Jewish side, the Israeli side, about what is their fear? So you can't go in and make decisions, which often happens, especially in the political realm. You're basing the decisions solely on knowledge, right? And military power, and not necessarily on the other. So it's getting behind the facts and getting to the heart of it. Once that person trusts that you hear them, that you want to know them, that you have some respect for their dignity, now you're beginning to get a little bit closer to what's the story behind them. What is you're in their shoes? Now they're no longer going to be an enemy. I have many friends who've gone to the other side on many, many things, and they are no longer the enemy then. Now some real work can be done. Reconciliation work can be done. The dialogue can be ready to be open, but that other part has to take place first. It's like setting the table for the next thing to happen.
Oh, I love that metaphor. That's a great way to put it. Yeah. So what about social media? It seems like that is maybe a place where it's really hard to set the table because you're not there to have these connecting, like one-on-one experiences before you start tackling hard issues. It seems like you strip out the connection and like go straight to the dialogue.
My first thought on that when that was happening with COVID was, Exactly. That's not going to happen because so much depends on being in that range, in that physical range, and you can feel that about a person. So you just have to change gears again and work a little bit harder about speaking what the truth is. So now a lot of our Zoom workshops, they are on Zoom and people have been able to translate. I took one of them from Susan and Leah, who are the head here of Compassion, and Andrea, and I took one from them a couple of years ago sitting on the couch, and I was able to get just as close emotionally as long as people were being honest. And so there's a commitment there, right? I call this the mystery of faith. Listening to me is the mystery of faith because you can't see it. So you still, but you have to engage in the things of truth telling and intimacy and transparency and kindness and goodness of the other person and go forward from there. It's possible. It is possible.
Yeah. That reminds me actually, and maybe we probably should have covered this at the beginning, but would you talk about when you are one-on-one with someone, what would you talk about body language? I loved how you talked about what it looks like to be really listening to somebody.
So that is really important, body language, right? So that's in the facts, feelings, and values as well. And so, yes, body language and color of clothes even, but body language, watching the other person, it would be fun for you to sit on the side, like at an airport or somewhere, and just try to figure out what the body language is saying. What is it about the openness? So the number one way of body language is eye contact. And so the light of life comes through the eyes, and you are inviting that person through your mind. You're inviting that person, and they can feel it because they're in your range now, right? So they can feel it. And you're inviting them to say, I'm here. It's an invitation. I appreciate you being here. It's so good of you. I hope you have the essence within yourself to believe that this is going to be good. It's going to work out fine. You can do this. And you can do that without words. It just is that energy field that you're giving. So the first part would be with your eyes. Definitely a touch on the arm if that can work. But your eyes are the first one where the light of life enters in to the other person.
There's something really amazing about feeling someone giving you all of that attention too. I mean, I think we could probably all think of a few people in our life who always look at you that way, who ask how you're doing, yes, and they are looking so deeply at you, yes, that like you can tell that you're the only, yeah, thing happening for them right then. It really is a gift to like just have a real like pause with someone and feel them giving you all of their energy and attention. Because I think it's
true.
Some days I wonder, like, and at the end of the day, have I like looked at my kids today? Like looked to them and like, did we like have a connection? Because you could easily communicate for 9 hours and then it's bedtime, it's like I never looked at them.
Yeah. So even touching, holding hands with them, that is a point of contact where they can have that feeling. So let me ask you, Aubrey, in your listening with your friend that day where you had that experience, how did you feel with your eye contact? Was that easy to do or not?
Actually, it like made me kind of emotional. It was different. It was really interesting. Like it was like a laser beam. Like it felt like so much connection with someone who we have this like very long old relationship to be able to,
yes,
be in something that, yes, was really painful. Yeah. Like making eye contact and sitting right next to each other felt it was peace generating. Like that's the best way I can put it.
So you'd be surprised. You'd be able to do that with a stranger because you do a centering practice first, which is to breathe. And you do this breathing and count to the four, to four, and then hold it. Count to four. Exhale to the count of four. Hold yourself and repeat it. And that helps the cortisol to drop out of your system and the serotonin to come in, so that this part of your brain now is the creative part and it can be creative enough to tell you to be calm instead of reactionary. And so really important to center yourself in some way and give yourself compassion and appreciation that if you can't, you can shut your eyes and compose yourself again, and then come back. It's a practice. So it's a tool, just like I call it like learning to drive a car, right? So you're driving a car. So if you're going to be distracted in driving a car and looking over here and putting on your Bluetooth and, oh, let me get the ray, you're distracted. Something can happen so quickly, right? So really you're the driver in the listening. You're the driver. And so it's up to you how much distracted you want to be. So if you can center yourself and come back to yourself with a stranger. The other point is to think about not every listening session has to be an intense listening session. What if it's just about you're in service for the other? But what if you practiced by saying something good? Like you talk about, what's the best experience I had this year? What did I love about this vacation? And you give each person 3 minutes to talk. And just that exchange that comes from the heart makes that connection.
Yeah.
Christine,
I love all that.
Oh, sorry, Aubrey, were you going to say
ahead,
something? Tim. Oh, just that I feel like sometimes these days, because things are so contentious, maybe we save our most difficult discussions for online, and what happens in person is more like small talk. And I see conversations happening on social media constantly where people seem to be, you know, people seem to be talking past each other. I'm curious if you have tactics for making a back and forth that's taking place where you can't see body language and you can't hear expression or any of those things, making that succeed? Or is social media essentially a hopeless medium for communication?
It definitely compromises a little bit about the kind of experience that you can have. A lot of it is if that person is willing. So the first thing you do is you move the conversation out of the head and you start asking a question from the heart. So you could say a deepening question and just ask, so how did that experience make you feel? You know, you're centering in. So how did that make it? Talk about that a little bit more about. And so they'll go into their head and then you'll have to bring them back again and say, so how did that feel? What would you change about it? Some things like that. And move them from their pronouns of they or we or I, and make it I statements instead. It can't be you. You always, they. And finding some gentle ways to move from judgment and blame into appreciation. But if you come and you set the table, guess what? They're there, they're coming to your table, and they will feel that you have switched the table setting. And there's plates there now and glasses of water. And when that switches, their dialogue will. So the way you come presently to the table will automatically switch them.
I love that.
And I love the...
Right.
Just this principle of listening with your heart. I think, and I'm thinking about the breathing and how useful that would be to just be aware all the time of when you're starting to get tight and reactive and
yes.
You want to start talking fast, you know,
yep.
I think that would be so useful to recognize like something's going on and I'm feeling like a lot of emotion about what this person is saying. And
right.
Instead of talking right now, I'm going to like breathe and recenter. I love that you keep
That's
saying
right.
that, like just center and,
That's
and
right.
like find and- yourself and connect again.
That's exactly right. You said it perfectly. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I just need to take a breath right now from a conversation that's getting intense. And just saying that, I just need to take a little breath here and recenter myself. Because yes, there's feelings in your body that you know, you have the wisdom, you know, when someone's powering up and you need to pull back. It's all about shifting those gears quite a bit. From your brain to your heart and just accessing that and saying that exact thing, right? We call those triggers. What triggers you? And right. Being aware what triggers you and just say, hey, I can't talk about this right now, or this is a little bit much, but I sure appreciate this offering you just gave. And it means so much. I can see how much you value this.
And this kind of reminds me too, I love what you said at the beginning about what did you say about leading people to their own wisdom, to discover their own
That's
wisdom.
Right.
So talk about That's that right. moment. Like, when does that happen in a, in, in a listening, what do you call it? Like a, when you're listening to someone,
that they, so they find their own wisdom. Okay. So I begin long before I even begin, I begin, and I usually have some prayer time with them, but I set the stage in my mind that this person is a whole person. And there's something called the triangle. It's a triangle, and it's a victim. It's a create, it's a victim. It's a perpetrator, and it's a rescuer. That's the triangle: perpetrator, rescuer, victim. In a conversation, we move through that triangle to all of the positions, maybe five times or more, depending how long the conversation is. So the thing I try to project is, long before this conversation starts, I say, this person has the wisdom within them. They can create their solution. I don't need to rescue them. They will have the, they have the intellect and the wisdom within them. They have the answer. They might not be good about accessing it because we've become, as Tim says, my Tim always says, we've become a nation of followers, right? We just look for the next leader, look for the next leader. He'll tell us what to do. They're going to solve the problem. And instead, we need to come to the table with, you have that within you. It may not be the first try that you're going to get the answer, but so ask a deepening question. So where could we go to look for that? How could we look at this differently and see yourself as co-creators instead of a rescuer? You're a coach, right? And instead of a perpetrator, you're going to be what? What is that? A challenger, I think. I think that's what the third one is. I can't remember what that one is, but I think it is a, you're a challenger. You're inviting them.
I wonder if I wonder if it might be difficult for some parents thinking about their relationship with their children to hear that, because it's so easy when you're a generation ahead to think that you've got the answers, and it, rather than like believing that your child has this, they might, you know, I can easily see myself thinking, well, you know, they've never been through this before, and I have, and I can tell them, you know, what the right answer is here. What's going wrong with my thinking there?
So true. I'm of that generation where they call it helicopter, right? Helicopter, right? Parenting, telling them what to do. Oh, I wish I could do it over again.
Yes, I think our generation may have gotten even worse than yours, actually.
Right. Oh, I don't know about that. But thing is, to ask a question. The thing is always to go back to a question. So if you already believe that they have the wisdom within you, you will be so happily surprised at some of their answers. And the question would just be so simple to say, so what would you do in this situation? What do you think we should do?
And so validating. It's so validating to hear, I mean, to hear someone you respect give you all of that trust, that, you know, really asking, what do you think you should do? Because I trust you that you can figure
it out. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And why can't it be a co thing? They don't have all the answers either. And so, wow, let's look at this together. There's so much respect and kindness in that, and dignity, right?
Love that. Maybe to close, could you share just a way or two that we can practice, that we can start to really use this in our daily life? If this isn't a regular habit, what can we do to kind of make this normal?
Well, if you want to start somewhere, start somewhere on positive things, like what made you happy today, and say, I'm going to sit here, if you're doing it with your children or an adult, and say, I'm going to give you 3 minutes just to speak about anything you want to talk about. You just speak. And then after it's done, then you are the speaker. You switch places and you say, wow, thank you for letting me. I'm so glad you listened so well to what I said, or to the speaker. I'm so glad that you offered your space, and switch positions. It's a tool. So it's not just like happening overnight. You practice every day, and soon it becomes part of your life in an everyday conversation.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you so much. This is a lot to think about and a lot to start using every day. We're so grateful that you'd share this all with us.
Yes, thank you, Christine.
Thank
this
you,
is such a
thank you both, Tim and Aubrey. I hope that it's helpful to at least one.
Yes. Sure, well, we're on one. So mission accomplished.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Christine.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Thanks as always for listening, and we really hope you enjoyed this conversation. And of course, a huge thanks to Christine for coming on. If you'd like to find out more about the Compassionate Listening Project, you can head to compassionatelistening.org. And as always, if Faith Matters content is resonating with you, and if you get a chance, we'd love for you to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen on. It definitely helps get the word out about Faith Matters, and we really appreciate the support. Thanks again for listening, and as always, you can check out more at faithmatters.org.